I am Chris Williams. I am the Director of Communication and Operations in the Davis School District. I've been with the school district now for 18 years. And during that whole time, I've wanted to have a series in which I could sit down with individual teachers and ask them, what is it like to be a teacher? Talk to me a little bit about the craft of teaching. This series is entitled, I Teach. We hope as you listen to this and as you view this, that you'll come away with the same feeling that I always come away with after visiting with our teachers. How incredible they are and how lucky we are to have them work in our classrooms. Welcome. Thanks for being with us. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I'm Anjanette McNeely and I am a kindergarten teacher at Layton Elementary.
Maybe why don't we start with, you were a student at Utah State and so you were thinking about going into law, but somehow transitioned into, you did some student teaching in Smithfield, and just a little bit about that experience. So kind of how you started in this career path.
So I didn't grow up always thinking I was going to be a teacher. That wasn't my path that I, you know, taught my dolls or anything like that. I didn't really think about what I wanted to do till I got in high school. And at that point in time, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. I was looking into law. I took a child development class at Davis High. And part of that was that we had a preschool and the kids would come in and we would work with them and we would do projects and we would get an evaluation. And at the end of the evaluation, the teacher had written on my paper, have you ever considered being a teacher? And I really hadn't thought about it a lot. But as I kind of moved through and started college, I took lots of generals, different classes, took things that would pertain to law, but things that were generals. And someone told me that to try teaching and that if I didn't like it, I could always graduate with a teaching degree and probably still get into law school. So I started taking the education classes and I did spend my time student teaching at Smithfield at a kindergarten through second grade school. It was really kind of a fun school because of the uniqueness of the lower grades. And I loved the time I spent there. I like specifically to teach younger children, although I have taught in different avenues in my life, from kindergartners to, or even preschoolers to older, I don't know, I don't want to say older people, to grown-ups, from kindergartners to grown-ups. So I've had a lot of experience teaching a lot of age groups. So I used to feel a little funny about my path to teaching because it seemed like everybody had this. I always grew up that I was going to be a teacher. But I recently saw a survey and only 40% of teachers kind of had that path and 60% of the rest of us found our way to teaching through some other unique way.
Well, that's interesting. I would have, yeah, because the common thought is, well, this was a calling, right? Yeah. Somehow, and I don't really remember the path, but you talked about Darren already, and you had applied for like a part-time position, maybe. I can't remember. But he called you and said, this is your job. And I don't know if you knew him beforehand. So just talk a little bit about how you broke into South Clearfield Elementary.
So my first job after I graduated was at South Clearfield Elementary. And I taught there for 4 years in kindergarten until my first baby was born. And then I took the path to stay home with my kids. And it took 13 years off. I would volunteer at Bluff Ridge Elementary. And Mike Venable was the principal. And I would go in each year and have him sign that I had volunteered so many hours because it would help keep my certificate current. And he would say to me, you know, my best teachers, some of my very best teachers are the ones who've left and come back. So, you know, come back to teaching at some point in time. And I had an experience where I ran into a couple of teachers who were still at South Clearfield that were had mentioned to me there was going to be a job opening there. And then I had an experience where I ran into Darren Allred, who was the principal there, and just mentioned I taught there and I might be looking to come back to teaching, but that's where it ended. And then I got a phone call. I remember I was in my garage. My kids brought the phone out to me, and it was Darren Allred, and he said, this is Darren Allred. I have this job here, and I think it's you. And I said, I don't even have like my certification current. You know, there's a lot of things that we'll need to do. And he said, you know, can you come into my office? My vice principal is here. He'll be leaving soon for the summer, and we just want to talk to you. And so, you know, don't even dress up. Just come to my office. And then the next day they called and said, you know, you have to go through all your screening processes and things, but we think this is your job. So.
Not even dress up. That's kind of...
I felt a little strange about that. Just come as you are.
What is it about kindergarten that is, I know you've said, you know, I don't necessarily maybe see myself kindergarten for the rest of my career, but what is it about kindergarten that has you, that made you decide that this is where I am, this is where I function, this is where I flourish?
I think that I love being kind of the first, you know, in a traditional teaching situation to kind of mold them for their learning career. I love the research on the growth mindset and the understanding that learning is messy and that struggle can be difficult but also can be joyful. And if we set that pattern in play at a young age like that, and they don't have expectations that learning will always be easy, that it will always come, you know, with no effort, but they understand that it's kind of a messier process, and you can give them little bits of struggle and failure and then help them see through that. And I think if we can start them out with that understanding, then as they move through their school career, they'll be so much more prepared for the kind of the beauty of learning, not just I want to get this grade or I want to beat someone out, but learning can be so like contagious and exciting. And I think that's why I like to start with them, to try to put them on a path that hopefully as they move forward, that they will keep choosing that, and they will keep choosing to kind of expose themselves to challenges and not fight, not back down, and that they can keep growing and learning. And, you know, we can create an even better generation as we move forward to solve even more complex problems.
You mentioned to us there was a student with dyslexia, and you were really focused in on, I've got to help this kiddo. And I don't know exactly how challenging it was for him to be in a kindergarten classroom, but can you just explain the kiddo that was in front of you and how you determine, I'm going to work with this kiddo and he's going to be successful?
Well, in our class, we're kind of a team, and you're going to learn. It's just part of it. We're all getting on the team. We're all going to fight through our struggles. And it's my job to kind of coach them through when they're having difficulties. You know, I want to bring them all up. Everybody needs the opportunity to learn. And this little guy wasn't responding to any of the interventions that had always worked in the past. You know, we tried so many things and he just wasn't being able to grasp the concepts that he needed for learning. And so I just started investigating because I knew, you know, that was my job to figure out what was he missing? What could I help him do so that he could still become a successful reader? And I started investigating and asking questions, and I talked to a lot of people who I figured had more knowledge and experience, but we didn't find a lot of answers until I found a seminar down at the Utah State Office on Dyslexia. And I went to a 3-hour seminar there and came back with some really good information and started being able to dig into what is it that's going to help kids who struggle with this type of learning problem. And they are very intelligent people with dyslexia. And so it's really difficult as they look around and see these other kids are understanding something and it's just not making sense to me. But there are patterns and pathways that we can work with to help them become successful readers. And so we put into play an intervention that allowed him to draw his own flashcards because he was very artistic, just very artistic child. And so he drew his own flashcards that had a lot of meaning to him, told his own story, and used his art. And then he would practice those specific flashcards. It was 20, 25 minutes a day when we'd practice and practice and practice, but the pathways started to connect for him. And by the end of the year, he had learned almost all of his letters and sounds so that he could move on to first grade with a lot better prepared than he would have if, you know, we couldn't have found that avenue to help him.
That's really cool. And I'm sure he felt like you're someone who made it safe for him to learn and to progress into, you know, yeah, there's going to be struggles, but that's okay.
Yeah, and he was a very social, very friendly child, but he had kind of started developing an attitude towards learning. And I think it was because he was an intelligent child and he knew these kids were getting something. Why wasn't he getting this? And I could see that if we didn't help him find a way, you could see like the fence go up, you know, and the ways to maybe cut corners or to look at other people, cheat, you know, do whatever you needed to be successful in school, but not really partake of the learning, not really understand what reading was all about.
You had talked about, you know, maybe the thing that separates me from other teachers is I'm able to organize and see the forest.
Yeah, and I think we all have gifts, and it wasn't something that I discovered early in life, but I can see where I want them to be, and then I can see how to plan backwards to get them there. And that's and I guess I have an ability to gather information and be able to figure out where those pieces go to build a system and a pattern to help people be successful.
Do you see that in your head? Or do you put it down on paper, drawing diagrams, these are the steps that I'm gonna take? How do you go about organizing, this is the path that I'm gonna take my class on?
I don't know exactly. I think about it, and as I gather new pieces of information, I just think, okay, where does that fit? How does that fit? How can that make my teaching better? You know, everything you add into your classroom would come at a cost, you know, time and energy and effort. And as I try to acquire new information, new strategies, I always think about where can I put this that it will be more beneficial than what I have already. You know, if it comes at too high of a cost, then I wouldn't put it in. And it just seems like everything just kind of rolls around in my brain and eventually kind of pieces together. The more that I kind of just think about it and ponder it, then they'll start to piece together for me. And then working with the kids, you know, I can see what's working and what's not working. As you know, talk and teach and assess, you know, I can see the things that are making the light bulbs turn on.
One thing that you've said has really, maybe not changed emphasis, but brought a new addition to your class is some of the things that you've learned from the Ron Clark Academy. I'm not necessarily sure if you mentioned that's fine. I don't know if there's any harm in that, but definitely there are aspects of it where kids are not forced, but they're put in a situation to feel more comfortable socially. They look you in the eye, they shake your hand, whatever. And they've changed because of that. Can you explain what that's all about?
Well, as I've come to kind of understand and work more on social skills, it seems like it's any other skill that we work with, that the more we practice it, the better we are at it. And our children, they're so open to learning at this age, but we're not practicing, you know, communicating with others. There's a lot of time spent with technology, but not on our connection with other human beings. So we've worked on having eye contact, asking and answering questions, you know, leaning in when you have a conversation, knowing how to have a handshake, saying thank you after you receive things from others. The most interesting thing that's happened since we've really integrated the saying thank you for everything that you get in the classroom is that you feel there is a greater appreciation just for the opportunity to be at school and the opportunity to learn. as they say thank you for every time they have an art project or every paper that they complete or every time you hand out anything to them, they say thank you. They feel gratitude, and gratitude is a powerful force that helps us, you know, feel human connection together. And as we feel that, we're more open to learning. The brain is amazing, and the things that we can do and grow when we challenge ourselves. And it is hard. Last year, I had a little boy in my class who had struggled with preschool. He couldn't get in the door many days and would cry and would go home, and the social thing was really difficult for him. And then, but we had started in kindergarten with these social skills and the shaking the hand, the eye contact, speaking clearly, and he had practiced them. And then we had our amazing shake competition. And the kids first had classroom competitions where we had the Latin High Latino in Actions come and judge. And he was judged as one of the top three in our classroom. And then he got to move on and go to the second round of judging, where he went in to an interview with our principal. He dressed up and had, you know, a suit and tie on, went in and was just beaming in this interview with the principal. And he was one of the top, he was the top four in the kindergarten to second grade division. And it was just, you know, practicing. It wasn't easy for him. It was a hard thing for him to do. But the practice and the confidence came through the difficulty and the effort.
So how long have you incorporated the teaching practices of Ron Clark? And once you've learned those, is it a case of, I wish I would have known those years ago, because it would have just changed my approach in some aspects of how I teach?
So I don't think we can go back to the, I wish I would have known, because I would have taught so much better then, because what we need to do is learn and then do better the next time. We can't go back and change what we are, and that was part of our journey as learners and teachers as well. I'm just grateful for the professional development opportunities I've had. I know John Hattie talks about that the number one thing to make a difference for students is actually teachers who know their impact on students. And those teachers work collectively and collaboratively together. And that is what grows us, is my opportunity to have been able to work with other great educators and to be able to go to places and watch those great educators. It helps you learn in a way that you really can't any other way, to watch top people teach. The strategies that you can pick up are amazing that way.
Do you find yourself being a coach to other teachers, because you've coached yourself? I don't know if you've changed your mindset. Maybe you're always positive.
No.
you've coached yourself in, you know, I can't do anything about the past. Let's learn from it. Let's pick up what I've just garnered from this professional development class and carry on. I know things will get better. It's just a case of moving forward.
None of us have a growth mindset all the time. You know, we bounce back and forth between growth and fixed mindset. I just have, as I've learned about it and taught it, especially when you teach something, you get better at it, right? So I'm more aware of when I go into a fixed mindset, and I have more of a plan to pull back out and think about the importance of learning versus, you know, these other maybe goals or things that we want to hit. Assessment's a big one for teachers, where we want our kids to be at a certain level on the assessments, because that's what a lot of people look at and value. But I think that's part of what's really hard in teaching right now, is that we love to teach, we love that people learn, but the assessment can sometimes really take the wind out of your sails. And I do tend to try and coach others. I love to learn so much that if I learn something new, it's like I can't stop myself from telling other people about it. And so I want to share those things that are working for me. And I also know that I've gleaned so much from other educators sharing with me through the years. That collaboration piece for me is key. And so I love to be able to bounce ideas off others and hear how it's working for them or what's not working, so that we can move forward. And I really love to hear, you know, if something that I've implemented helps someone else and it makes anything else a better teaching situation, because we want all of our students to be able to grow up and have the best life that they can have.
You had talked about how kids need to be in charge of their own learning, and sometimes you specifically talk to them about the brain and how it works and how you have to make certain connections, which to me is like way above a kindergartner's head. But you found that's not the case.
No, I think there's power in understanding our brain. I think we underestimate our own abilities a lot because of fear of taking the challenges. And I think that when we talk about a brain and how it's learning and what's happening and really, you know, that the science behind that, we haven't known that for that long. But to be able to teach children, well, this is, you know, these are your neurons, these are dendrites, you're going to make connections. And those connections are deepened when you practice. Things don't come the first time. You know, we need practice to deepen these connections so that we can move that learning, connect that learning with other things. And so when they come up to me and they think they're ready to pass off their sight words or something, and they read them, there's hesitation or mistakes, we say, oh, your connections just aren't strong enough. And then you must need more practice. And that understanding is so much easier than, oh, you failed. You know, we just understand how our brain learns, and we'll just put in the effort it takes to make those changes.
Something that I should apply in my own life.
Well, we all should, right? Yeah.
You talked about, that the students have to understand they're in charge of their own learning, and that your role, you can't follow them in first grade, you can't follow them in second grade. All you know is I've got to have them ready to go to first grade and second grade. How do you develop that thinking in a kiddo in the first year of school?
So I'm a big believer in growth mindset praise, which is process praise. So you're acknowledging the effort that it takes. You're acknowledging what you see and hear. And so instead of saying you're so smart, I will say I see the effort that you put forth to, you know, finish that, or I know that you've been really working hard on that goal, or I see that the practice that you have done has paid off, and now you know those words well enough to pass off. I want them to understand that their rewards come in an intrinsic way, that they can believe in themselves, and that their idea of who they are isn't tied to my praise or my lack of praise. So that as they move through the grades, that they have that understanding for themselves, that they have value and they can learn, and that their effort will allow them to learn and grow in a greater way. Things don't come easy always. Even there's kids who go all the way through maybe even high school and it's a cakewalk for them, but they'll hit a wall. At some point, we all will hit a wall. And so if we learn that right away, that challenge is part of the process, and that failure actually gives us a really good opportunity to pick up and learn from our mistakes. The research shows that when you get something right, there's not a whole lot that goes on in your brain, but when you make a mistake, there's all kinds of centers that light up in your brain. So even the mistakes can deepen our learning. So we want to kind of embrace that, not make silly mistakes, but embrace what we can learn when we do make mistakes.
You've mentioned the best card, and this kind of flows right into it. The best card you ever got was someone had written some statement that said what they appreciated about you was that you're someone who will never quit.
Well, I had a little girl who wrote me a card at the end of the school year last year. And that was one of the things that we had talked about is, I'm challenging you to make it through high school and graduate and keep learning. Whatever you do in your life, keep learning. And she wrote me a little note, and it said, Mrs. McNeely, I will never quit. And I got another really one that I loved last year that said, thank you. It was from a parent. And she said, thank you for teaching my son that doing hard things is worth it.
How much did that kiddo struggle in kindergarten?
Which one?
The second one.
The second one. The second one was actually quite a bright little boy. And sometimes when you're, especially if you're a good visual learner at this age and you can pick things up visually really quickly, then you start in that pattern, right in kindergarten, that things are always going to be easy and they just zip through things without really, you know, spending time and thinking deeply. So there were times where I would say, okay, slow down and really think about this, and he'd get a little frustrated because most things came so easy. And so then we would just talk about it. You know, remember, everybody is going to have hard times. One of our class mottos is, it's supposed to be hard.
You know, when I was in your class the other day, you look at things that you take for granted. There's the ABCs, A through Z, and there's all the numbers. And we all know that, but there was a point where we didn't know that. How do you as a teacher approach that? You've got kids coming in at different levels, and some know numbers, some can spell their name, some can't. How do you go about the process of being a kindergarten teacher?
Well, that is one of the advantages, I think, of being a kindergarten teacher, is that we don't have a lot of expectation of knowledge coming in, and they are at a range. But we kind of start at the bottom and build up. And even students who might even know how to read might not understand the process that they're using to read. And so they all need those strong building blocks. Even students who might be able to count to 100 already, do they understand that teen numbers are groups of 10 and extra ones, and 20s are, you know, two groups of 10 and some extra ones? So there's a lot of deep understanding that can happen even in kindergarten. So we can build a lot on those deeper understandings.
We talked about one of the purposes of the video is to let people know the great teachers we have in the district. The other one is to try to attract other people into the profession, because people do retire. There are going to be slots. What do you say to someone who is thinking, man, I want to go into law, but I don't know. People keep on saying that I should go into teaching. What do you say about people who are exploring a path to go down?
Well, and teaching is messy, but it's also like life-affirming and joyful. It can be challenging, but it's a way that you know you're connecting with other human beings and you're helping them on their path of life. You can really make an impact for other people. It's a way to further learning and to even make us a better society, because an educated society is the society we all want to live in. It's a way to kind of make connections and love others and kind of build that kind of place that we all want to be in.
So describe for me your typical day in your classroom.
So each day at the beginning of the day, I greet the students at the door. We say good morning or good afternoon with eye contact. And then they come in the door and put away their backpacks and coats and get out things that they have that come home from school. And then we meet each other in front of the smart board, and each day we dance together. I am a terrible dancer, but kids don't care. And we move and we connect and we get a little bit vulnerable for the day's learning, and we also get energetic and connect with each other. And then we spend some time in small groups, working in smaller groups with the teachers and tutors, and then we move to what I like to call the learning rug, where we have whole group instruction, and they have time to work with partners and share information. There is time for students who are struggling or students who are advanced to get some interventions. We have their very favorite time, which is recess, as well as some fun preparation times like art and PE. And then we end our day with science or social studies, which is usually their very favorite. They love reading and math too, but when the science and social studies connect it together, so we're reading and we're writing and we're exploring things, that is some of their favorite things to do. And it's a short day, it's a quick day. We have a lot to cover in just a 3-hour period of time.
Talk about this dancing thing, because you must have picked that up somewhere, like this is a good idea to incorporate in the day.
So last year I had a unique opportunity to visit the Ron Clark Academy in Atlanta, Georgia. And one of the core aspects of their learning is movement. And they have really incorporated dance. And I thought it's not so much our culture here in Utah to enjoy and kind of express yourself through the movement like that, but I thought we should give it a try because I could see the advantages of it and the things that were happening with their learning because of that. And so I came back and then incorporated dancing each day. And it's interesting to watch the kids. Some of them jump right in and love it. Others are a lot more hesitant. It's interesting as I have parent volunteers in the room, because everybody in the room has to dance. If I'm dancing, everybody's dancing. And to see their enjoyment of it grow throughout the year, at first it's kind of, you know, you're worried about how you look and what others will think. And then you just kind of forget and get into the rhythm of the music and kind of feel that rhythm, which actually does help, especially struggling readers. Rhythm helps them learn to read. And so as you kind of forget yourself and just enjoy the feeling and the movement, then it becomes a kind of a bonding experience for our class. And people stop at our door all the time and join in with us.
Talk about your approach to teaching kindergarten.
Well, my approach to teaching kindergarten is to keep it energetic and active and engaged, but also make it challenging and set it up as the first experience so that as they grow through schooling, that they kind of have those building blocks, not only just the academic important building blocks, but the social important building blocks as much as I can help them, and just the knowledge of self building blocks. There seems to be so much a struggle in our society right now of figuring out who you are and being able to kind of come to terms with challenge and struggle, being able to, battle things like depression and anxiety. And I think I heard or read somewhere that our students were struggling because it's like they're unemployed. And as an adult, if you're unemployed, your self-esteem is really low. And if we aren't making our children work at school, they would have that same feeling of lack of worth because they are not feeling, you know, employable. They're not working hard. They don't have a purpose. So my approach is to help them understand why we learn and understand that there's strategies. And if something doesn't come easy, if they put some effort in and they maybe dig a little bit, get some help from someone who has more knowledge, or put some key pieces in, that all of a sudden that learning journey can transition for them. It seems to me that many people who push through their struggles become the most successful and kind of most contented with who they are and where they're going. So that's my hope, is that I set them up strong as they move forward, because I can't see. I always wish I had a crystal ball. I tell the parents always that if their child's struggling in something, I wish we had a crystal ball and we could see which would be the best approach, or if this extra practice is necessary, but we don't. So we just want to set them up to have the best life experience they can.
I've picked your brain a lot. Anything else that we've missed? Anything that you feel that you felt like, I want to share this, but you didn't ask me. Now the sirens are going, right?
I was gonna say something really, maybe wait for the sound.
Yeah, yeah.
I read an article in the New Yorker. It was from 2016, and the author wrote about the state of education. And he wrote about the fact that as a society, we value our individual teacher. We love our children's teachers that make an impact on their lives, but we aren't really valuing the profession as a whole. And that's something that I would love to see, is the understanding and the respect for teaching, that it's a difficult job. and it's an important job, and that what really matters is good teachers. That's what will really make the difference for our children to grow up to be the best that they can be, is a high quality teacher. And that takes an investment from schools, from the school districts, from parents. We have to invest in good teachers.